Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You don't realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Over the last few weeks, we've been looking at some significant moments from the public ministry of Jesus. We started a few weeks ago looking at Mark chapter 5, where Jesus had just got out of the boat after being in the boat with a storm, and the disciples thought they were going to drown, and Jesus commanded the storm to be still, and then they arrived on the other side of the lake where there was this person who had an incredibly dark place. He was possessed by demons, was cutting himself, was ostracized from his community, was not wearing any clothes. And Jesus cast out of him these demons called Legion, in a place where a Roman legion, a powerful Roman legion, was stationed. And the demons went into pigs, and the pigs ran down the hill and were drowned in the lake. And the local Roman legion symbol was of a boar's head. And the local deities were, the local pigs were considered sacred. And so we see Jesus here having power over the local political and religious powers in an area that was outside of Israel. And then the people of the area were so afraid, they begged Jesus to go away. And the person who'd been set free, the demoniac who'd been set free, he wanted to go with Jesus, but Jesus told him, "No, I want you to go and engage with these people and tell them what you have done, what I have done for you." And so the disciples and Jesus leave. And then last week we saw the remarkable transformation that had happened in this area called the Decapolis, the 10 cities that were east of the Sea of Galilee. When Jesus came back with his disciples a little while later, all of a sudden now, because of the witness of this man whose life had been transformed, they flocked to Jesus, they ran through the villages, they got their sick and took them to Jesus. 4,000 of them gathered to hear Jesus' teaching and to receive healing. And when we looked at these events, both of the healing of the demoniac and of what had happened later, we connected there with some words that we're starting to use to help focus our attention and our life as a church together. And just like with those disciples and Jesus and the demoniac, we as a church exist to encounter God, to encourage each other, and to engage with the communities around us. And just like that place east of the Sea of Galilee was transformed and people came to know Jesus and people were healed and set free, we here seek a future that all the people around us in Chadston and Ashwood and in our wider networks would have opportunities to know God better and experience God's goodness. And when I think about that sometimes it's hard, but let's break it down into your street where you live, the place where you work, that those people, the people next door, would experience God's goodness in some way and have an opportunity to know God better. Last week we unpacked the first phrase in that top statement, that we exist as a church to encounter God. and we looked at 8 different ways that where people have typically encountered God, and saying that if we want to encounter God, the thing for us to do is to show up in those places and leave the rest to God, whether that's in worship or reading the Word or taking a walk in creation or resting or wrestling in prayer or welcoming strangers into your life or working or just stopping to wonder about what's been going on in your life. All of these ways are ways that people have encountered God in the past. And sometimes it's dramatic, like the demons being cast out, and other times it's subtle, like Jesus telling the man, no, just go and tell people what you've done, what I've done for you. The drama of it, the intensity of it is always up to God, but the significance of it depends on our response. And so we come to the passage today. And here's the setting of the scene. You've got Jesus and he's come to Jerusalem. And there's been increasing crowds. There's all of this publicity and people flocking out to meet Lazarus who'd been raised from the dead. And Jesus had come into Jerusalem proclaiming himself to be king by riding on a donkey. And people were claiming him as the son of David, as the heir of the throne of Israel. They were expecting him to get rid of the Romans. He was a rock star. He was worse than the Beatles arriving in Australia however many years ago. And he was a centre of attention, both good and bad. People were clamouring for him, and other people wanted to kill him. And the disciples were in the privileged position of being in the inner sanctum, you know. Have you ever been in the inner sanctum, you know, where you have special access to the boss or to a famous person or whatever else, you know? Maybe you're not necessarily anyone particularly famous or anything like that, but maybe you've been a secretary to the head of a company. Right, and then people come through you to get to them. Right, and so yeah, this is what was going on, and the 12 around Jesus were a bit like his cabinet. You know, they were on the inside; they had the privileged access and the privileged position. And so they come to this meal, and they enter into the place where it was, and they gather around, and obviously there's usually there'll be servants around helping with stuff, but there isn't on this time. And then there's all of this sort of embarrassed wondering about things and looking here and looking at each other, and then nothing really happens, and then the meal starts and people are maybe wondering, and then the shocking thing happens. Now Jesus gives them time to see whether they would do it, to see whether one of them would get up and wash everyone's feet, to make sure that they're clean for the festival the next day. They would have already had some sort of ceremonial washing, and now Jesus is seeing whether anybody will take up the role of the servant and washing the feet, and no one does. And so then Jesus, the kingpin, Jesus, the most important person, takes off his robe, puts on the garments of a servant, and goes and begins to wash the disciples' feet. And the disciples get really embarrassed by this. I should have done that. No, I should have done that. I wish I should have done that. It's a bit like that sometimes happens in my house, and it's all my fault. We'll be sitting in the lounge and all those sorts of things, and we've had a wonderful meal, and then all of a sudden I'll hear this clattering and banging and washing beginning to happen in the kitchen. When someone who's already cooked the meal starts to wash up the meal. And so then sometimes, and to my shame not all the time, I leap up and say, no, I should do that. Has that ever happened to you? No, you don't have to put your hand up. But that's what I think it was like going on for Peter and for the other disciples at that time. Maybe they'd been caught up in their own self-importance. I'm a person who helps provide access or limits access to Jesus. And a few verses earlier in a previous chapter, there's a sequence of events, and people wanted to see Jesus, who wanted to see, so they came to one of the disciples who went to someone, one of the other disciples who went to Philip, who went to Jesus. It was like these layers of people you had to go through. And so Jesus both gently and powerfully addresses them and the fact that they were thinking that that role is beneath them. And he also does something that they need. This is probably some detail that was around an argument amongst them about who's the greatest. Lots of banging going on down there. Fantastic. Excellent. Are the doors closed? Or was it just coming through the doors? Thanks, Paul. Doors are closed? Fantastic. Excellent. Popping balloons. Maybe we could... It would be more exciting if we had some balloons to pop in here, wouldn't we? But... balloons in here so we can pop them as well. That would be really good. So we have Jesus addressing or in interacting with disciples both in a practical way but also in a spiritual way. And what he's actually doing is that he's encouraging them. It says a few verses later over in towards the end of chapter 13 in verse 34, it says, "A new command I give to you, love one another as I have loved you. You must love one another." And he had just demonstrated his love for them by being a humble servant and washing their feet, which is what they needed. And he was about to demonstrate his love at an even deeper level by going and dying on the cross for them and for us. And this is a great picture of what we need to be like as a church. Jesus, at the end of the passage that we read out, said, "I've given you an example. This is what I want you to do. I want you to love one another. I want you to encourage one another." And there's two sorts of encouragement that we need that are demonstrated in this passage here before us today. The first sort of encouragement is the encouragement that, yes, you belong. That, yes, it's okay. And so Jesus comes and he washes their feet. And he says, "It's okay, you're part of me." And Peter says, "No, I don't want to be part of you. I don't want to have you washing my feet," Jesus, and said, "Unless I do this, you have no part of me." And the sort of pride and the selfishness that had been surfaced in this moment, the imperfection and the sin that had become evident in Peter's and the other disciples' life, Jesus says, "Okay, you forgot to do the washing up. You forgot to wash my feet. But it's okay, you're still part of me." And that's what we need as Christians. We need that sort of encouragement. That we've had a rough week. We haven't had time to pray. We lost the plot. We've flown off the handle. We've done something wrong. We're full of stress or whatever else, and we feel disconnected from God. And we come into the group of people and we gather around at a home or in a meal, and someone says, "It's okay." You know, you've had the crisis or something really bad happening, and you just need someone to put an arm around you and to reassure you that you're with them. You can't necessarily explain it all. You can't take away the pain of the loss or the grief or whatever, but you can encourage them by being with them. By speaking their love language, whatever that is. And at times, all of us will need that sort of encouragement. And here are the disciples who have failed to do the obvious thing, the thing that needed to be done. And Jesus graciously does it and says, "Okay, you're part of me." And Peter sort of wrestles with the receiving of the grace. "Oh no, God, if it's just not like it's my feet, then all of me." Now he's sort of this overreaction the other way because he's somehow embarrassed or whatever else, and he hasn't just learned the humble thing of receiving service as well as the humble thing of giving service. And Jesus gently navigates him through that issue. They needed the encouragement that even though they had failed, that they were part of Jesus. And later on, Jesus actually said to Peter, "You're going to fail. You're going to deny me." But he says, and it's recorded in Luke that he says, "But when you turn back, then strengthen the others." And so Jesus knew that there was this process where the followers of him would sometimes succeed and sometimes they would fail. But then it was really important that they gather back together and receive the encouragement that they're still part of God's family. And so we always need to be places of welcome. And on the other hand, when we feel like we're disconnected, when we feel like we've failed, don't listen to the lie that says, I shouldn't come. Don't listen to the whisper that says, oh, you're not good enough to go to church or go to that meeting or go to that meal. I have to go and just be by myself. No, that's a lie. You need the encouragement of people that will accept you as you are. And we need to give the encouragement to people, accepting them where they are. We as a church need to be a place where we encourage each other in that way. Because you may not need it today, but sometime you will need it. But maybe you do need it today. And hopefully you might receive it today. So let's be people that don't run away from that sort of encouragement. Let's be these people that humbly receive that sort of encouragement when we don't feel like we're worthy. When it's really obvious about the things that we've done wrong. To us at least. And let's be people who encourage one another. Who bear one another's burdens. Who gently restore people when they feel like they've failed and they're separated. And they weren't walking with God the way they thought they should, or they made a big mistake or whatever else. Let's be people who encourage people in that way and welcome people and enfold people. And do it in a setting where people are included. Do it around a meal. Do it around food. Someone once said if you took all the miracles and all the meals out of the Gospels, there wouldn't be much left. And that's pretty true. So that's one sort of encouragement that we need to receive. And one sort of encouragement that we also need to give. It's another way of saying loving one another. But it tries to put it in terms that describes the outcome. When we love someone like this, they will be encouraged. And they'll be built up. And they'll be affirmed. And they'll be welcomed back in. And we need to give that sort of love, that sort of encouragement to one another and be intentional about doing it. Because it's almost impossible to live the Christian life by yourself. Now some people try and do it, and sometimes in circumstances people are forced to do it by isolation or whatever else. But the way it's designed to happen is for when you're weak, me to give you some strength. And when from I'm weak, you to give me some strength. And when I'm not hearing God, for you to hear God and encourage me. And when you're not hearing God, for me to hear God and encourage you. When I'm available, when I'm not able to do something for myself or for other people, you have the ability to do that. And when you don't have the ability to do that, then I have the ability to do that. It's this interplay between all of us. There's never anyone that says, oh, I'm the person that never needs and always have to give. And other people who say, I never am able to give, I always need. It's always both. Receiving and giving that sort of encouragement. The encouragement of it's okay. We're in this together. But there's a second sort of encouragement that we need to have. And that's the encouragement. Spurring people on to do things. Giving them the reassurance or the push or the confidence that they can do something. And in this passage, that's what Jesus says. He brings that sort of encouragement. Verse 13, you call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you in an example that you should do as I have done for you. It says in another place that we should encourage one another onto good works. We should spur one another in those things. And we also need that sort of encouragement Not the sort of whip-cracking, guilt-inducing, you need to change, but yes, you can do this. Now, the two pictures are like, in the first case, you've got the child that falls over and scrapes their knee. And you open up your arms and say, come here. And they run to you or they stagger to you, and tears rolling down their face, and you enfold them in your arms. And they're encouraged that it's going to be okay. But the second sort of encouragement is like the parent standing in the pool 2 metres from the edge saying, come on, jump to me, I'll catch you. The encouragement for them to have a go at doing something. The challenge for them to step beyond what they've just done before, to step out of their comfort zone. And that's what we need as Christians too. And this is what Jesus does here. You've seen what I've done, now you do it. And none of us are like Jesus perfectly. But we can then encourage each other. You know, this is what I've found. This is what I've learned. You can talk to people about God. And the world doesn't cave in. The lightning bolts don't fall. It's okay. You can have a go. This is the way I did it. You don't know how to pray? This is what I've learned how to pray. Let me encourage you about. Let me tell you about the example of what I've learned by God's grace. You need to make sure you have a bit more rest in your life. This is the way that I did it. I cut out X, Y, and Z, and I rearranged my schedule this way so that I had some rest. Have a go. You can do it. God's with you. It's the courage to do something new. It's the courage to do something different. It's the courage to respond to the words of Jesus, the examples of Jesus, the promptings of God. We need both the encouragement that enfolds and the encouragement that pushes. The encouragement that affirms that we are loved and accepted, and the encouragement that says, yes, you can have a go. It is possible. So when we're thinking about our church and why we exist, we think about we exist to encounter God in word, in worship, in walking in creation, in resting in God, in wrestling in prayer, in wondering about the circumstances of our life, in welcoming people, in our everyday work. We exist to encounter God in those places. But we also exist to encourage each other. And we're not going to do a big long sermon about the third part of that, engage with the communities around us. We're just going to do it next week. So come along to brunch, enjoy tea, coffee, whatever else we have to happen to have on, and then just go engage with the people at Batesford. We're just going to be with them. I wrote a blog or an article in the newsletter a while ago that said one of the biggest things about doing mission is just showing up. Now, just being with people who are not Christians yet. You don't have to talk about anything. You don't have to do anything. The first hurdle is to just get over that thing that we're not just sitting in our own little happy house by ourselves or our own little church hall by ourselves, but we're out and engaging with people. They're normal human beings just like you and me. They go through all the ups and downs just like you and me. They have joys and hopes and sorrows just like you and me. And if we're going to do mission, then that's what we need to do. The first thing is to just engage with them. Find out their name. Hear their good stories. Hear what they know about God. And maybe they'll give you an opportunity and an invitation to share what you know about God. And so next week we'll simply do that. You might feel really uncomfortable. Well, find someone from his church and just wander around with them and let them do all the talking. And if you can't do that, just go around and just receive whatever the people give you at the different stalls. Take a step to engage. That's why we exist. To encounter God, to encourage each other and engage with the world around us. Because if we commit to doing those things, God will do his thing. If we commit to doing the following Jesus will do the building of the church. If we commit to do the encountering, the encouraging and the engaging, God will bring about the vision of people having opportunities to know God better and experiencing God's goodness. So isn't that good? We just need to do the things that are within our power, and God will do the things without of our power. We'll just do the things where we know we can encounter God. We'll just practice encouraging each other in the two ways I've talked about. And we'll just practice showing up with people. And we can expect that God will move in the midst of all of that and do the things that you and I can't. So we're going to finish our service in a few moments. And we're going to invite you to join us for morning tea in the hall. And it's going to be a meal of sorts, just like the meal that Jesus had with his disciples that we read about in John 13, where they forgot to wash each other's feet. Now, I'm not going to suggest you whip out there and start washing each other's feet this morning. But I want you to take this as an opportunity for encouragement. Have you had a rough week? Let someone know, and let someone just be with you and encourage you, to enfold you in. Look around, you might get a prompting in your heart, oh, that person looks like they've got a furrowed brow, or they're exhausted, or whatever else. Just go and encourage them, enfold them in. Or maybe in the midst of a conversation about what's coming up this week, you might be able to encourage one another. You can have a go at this. You can be Jesus to that person. You can make that change. Let's use morning tea this morning as a great example to practice encouragement, both the giving and the receiving. Let's pray.